Part 9. Political Repression. In times of unusual popular consciousness and mobilization, when the capitalist system faces grave political threats, the state resorts to repression until the danger is past. The major such waves in this country, the Haymarket Reaction and the Red Scares after the World Wars, are recounted by Goldstein in Political Repression in Modern America. But the wave of repression which began in the 1970s, though less intense, has been permanently institutionalized to a unique extent. Until the late 1960s, elite perspective was governed by the New Deal social contract. The corporate state would buy stability and popular acquiescence in imperialist exploitation abroad by guaranteeing a level of prosperity and security to the middle class. In return for higher wages, unions would enforce management control of the workplace. But starting during the Vietnam War era, the elite's thinking underwent a profound change. They concluded from the 1960s experience that the social contract had failed. In response to the anti-war protests and race riots, LBJ and Nixon began to create an institutional framework for martial law to make sure that any such disorder in the future could be dealt with differently. Johnson's Operation Garden Plot involved domestic surveillance by the military, contingency plans for military cooperation with local police in suppressing disorder in all 50 states, plans for mass preventive detention, and joint exercises of police and the regular military. Governor Reagan and his National Guard chief Louis Giuffrida were enthusiastic supporters of garden plot exercises in California. Reagan was also a pioneer in creating quasi-military SWAT teams, which now exist in every major town. The wave of wildcat strikes in the early 1970s showed that organized labor could no longer keep its part of the bargain, and that the social contract should be reassessed. At the same time, the business press was flooded with articles on the impending capital shortage and calls for shifting resources from consumption to capital accumulation. They predicted, frankly, that a cap on real wages would be hard to force on the public in the existing political environment. This sentiment was expressed by Huntington and others in The Crisis of Democracy, a paper for the Trilateral Institution, a good proxy for the elite thinking. They argued that the system was collapsing from demand overload because of an excess of democracy. Corporations embraced the full range of union-busting possibilities in Taft-Hartley, risking only token fines from the National Labor Relations Board. They drastically increased management resources devoted to workplace surveillance and control, a necessity because of discontent from stagnant wages and mounting workloads. Wages, as a percentage of value added, have declined drastically since the 1970s. All increases in labor productivity have been channeled into profit and investment, rather than wages. A new Cold War military buildup further transferred public resources to industry. A series of events like the fall of Saigon, the non-aligned movement, and the new international economic order were taken as signs that the transnational corporate empire was losing control. Reagan's escalating intervention in Central America was a partial response to this perception. But more importantly, the Uruguay Round of GATT snatched total victory from the jaws of defeat. It ended all barriers to transnational corporations buying up entire economies, locked the West into monopoly control of modern technology, and created a world government on behalf of global corporations. In the meantime, the U.S. was, in the words of Richard K. Moore, importing techniques of social control from the imperial periphery to the core area. With the help of the drug war and the national security state, the apparatus of repression continued to grow. The drug war has turned the Fourth Amendment into toilet paper. Civil forfeiture, with the aid of jailhouse snitches, gives police the power to steal property without ever filing charges, a lucrative source of funds for helicopters and Kevlar vests. SWAT teams have led to the militarization of local police forces, and cross-training with the military has led many urban police departments to view the local population as an occupied enemy. Reagan's crony Giuffrida resurfaced as head of FEMA, where he worked with Oliver North to fine-tune Garden Plot. North, as the NSC liaison with FEMA from 1982 to 1984, developed a plan to suspend the Constitution in the event of a national crisis, such as nuclear war, violent and widespread internal dissent, or national opposition to a U.S. military invasion abroad. Garden plot, interestingly, was implemented during the Rodney King riots and in recent anti-globalization protests. Delta Force provided intelligence and advice in those places and at Waco. Another innovation is to turn everyone we deal with into a police agent. Banks routinely report suspicious movements of cash under customer programs. Retailers report purchases of items which can conceivably be used in combination to manufacture drugs. Libraries come under pressure to report on readers of subversive material. DARE programs turn kids into police informers. Computer technology has increased the potential for surveillance to Orwellian levels. Pentium 3 processors were revealed to embed identity codes in every document written on them. Police forces are experimenting with combinations of public cameras, digital face recognition technology, and databases of all digital photos. Image Data LLC, a company in the process of buying digital driver's license photos from all 50 states, was exposed as a front for the Secret Service.